Good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am so excited. I'm going to tell you a few of the reasons I'm excited. Number one, I'm always excited on Monday because I've slept all weekend. I'm nice and rested and relaxed. So I have all of this energy. By Friday, I'm like, just go ahead and speak amongst yourself because I don't have the energy. The other reason I'm excited is Memorial Day. It's so much energy in the air. People are off. It's a holiday. I want to just take a moment to remember everyone who died so that and lost their lives and gave their lives so we can have the freedoms that we enjoy today. So happy Memorial Day to everyone who's tuning in to the show. I definitely appreciate you. I appreciate your support, but I am going to ask something of you. I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that's to go ahead and share this show because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. Here on the show, what we do is we educate as well as entertain. And I know just by talking to the panel before the show that this show is not only going to be educational, but it's going to have the unexpected. I don't know what's going to happen and what's going to come through on today's show, but I am going to go ahead and introduce you to our first guest. Our first guest is Mr. Elliot Mason. And Elliot is the author of The Arlington Orders. And he also has a new book called The Legal Killing. Good morning, Elliot. How are you?
Good morning, how are you?
I am excellent. I am excellent. I am excellent. My world these last few days, some people would consider crazy. And some of the things that have been coming to me is like, oh my God, I can't believe that. But you know what? A lot of it was about legal killing. Tell us about your book and what you do.
Well, the Arlington Orders or the Legal Killer, which I can start out, the one that's right now is released, the Arlington Orders. It's a book basically about a real life Civil War incident that happened where the Confederate Treasury disappeared in a secret operation. And today, if it were found, it would be the most significant find in American history. And I have people who stumble upon clues who basically go on this chase to find this lost Confederate treasury, but it becomes kind of a dark political thriller that talks about the real implications of how that we are the topics that we are still discussing this day about the Civil War, things that are still relevant to today. For instance, we're still arguing about Confederate monuments and what we should do with them. The Civil War is really unique to the American experience because we're still fighting the war 150 years later. The Legal Killer, which is soon to be released, that is basically a something that I researched heavily. It's about basically our federal justice system and the corruption, and it basically follows uncovering it through a serial killer. So that's kind of those two books are very different, but they kind of follow along the path of trying to uncover what's going on today.
You're just smiling. You just look so happy. You're talking about all this corruption and what's going on in the world and civil wars. Like you were telling a story about, Barney the dinosaur or something.
Yeah, no, I get excited about whenever I talk about they are very serious subject matter, and the stories are basically suspense thrillers, but they are very serious subject matter, and they are part of the public discourse today. But I get excited because I think people they want to be entertained. And when I first approached this idea, a lot of people say, well, why don't you write something that's more kind of a nonfiction book, that's more of a almost like an academic work? And I thought, people tend not to want to read those as much as they should. I love reading them, but a lot of people don't. People want to be entertained. So the idea was, how do I educate people and get them to learn, but at the same time, kind of keep their interest? And so I created these fictional stories around these very life real subject matters. And that's kind of how I do it. So it's a fun process. It is tiring, the research. And some people who I talked to, especially when I was doing The Legal Killer, they were threatened. I was threatened. Who will only talk to me under condition of anonymity. So I'll take their names to the grave with me. But yeah, it was a very exciting but kind of a little hair-raising process at times.
Okay, one of the things that I always say is that, excuse my naivety. Like, I'm one of those people that's to a certain extent naive. Like, I'm Pollyanna. Like, I believe this idealistic, perfect world, and none of this really happens. But you've been threatened. The people around you have been threatened for what is, if I'm understanding you correctly, a fictional book.
Mm-hmm. Because I, it's fictional, but it's not. The facts I use in my stories are I use real locations. I use real facts. I create fictional stories who I kind of develop to carry the story along. But the information that I'm revealing is all research. For instance, the Arlington Orders took me 2 years of research. The Legal Killer took me about 2.5 years. And the Arlington Orders wasn't so much that hair-raising aspect as was the Legal Killer, because of the people I talked to were still involved in the system and were scared to talk to me. It is a process in which I'm trying to combine two worlds, a fictional world, but using real information and real facts to carry, trying to educate people about what is actually happening. It's kind of a endless duality between worlds here that makes it exciting, but kind of nerve-wracking at the same time.
It sounds like it's like a alteration on the, well, if you've read I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by, if you read I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and then you just took the aspect of Maya Angelou that was like fact and then fiction and just reversed it. That's what it like comes to me.
Yeah. So while we're speaking, let me go ahead and introduce our next guest. I was just intrigued for a minute, Mr. Daryl Hulse, who is speaking to us. Daryl Hulse the second. And if you take a vote, I think Daryl has the best laugh on earth. I was trying to see if I can get him to do it.
I love that everything. It's so easy.
But aside from being voted best laugh on earth, Daryl is one of the most amazing people that I know. He's been on the show at least 4 times. He has been on Ash Sharifa videocast and podcast. If you by chance missed it, go to AshSharifa.com. and check out Daryl's interview. I was completely blown away because some of the information that he shared was kind of like what Elliot is sharing, is information that will shock you and you will believe that it's fiction, that it's made up. But Daryl is helps people with meditation. He's a metaphysical practitioner. He's just an amazing person. Good morning, Daryl, how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing excelente, as they say in Spanish. I'm looking forward to today because it's a.
Stop doing your John Travolta. Like, stop fixing your hair. He's like,
John Travolta.
We can see you, Tom Daryl. Cruise.
Tom Cruise, John Travolta. Come on.
Daryl, be serious now. Focus. The people need your message. They need you to talk about some of the things that you talked about on the show, like the different levels that people are going to go. You talked specifically about going from people think that once you become a vegetarian, like that's just it, that you achieve a certain level of enlightenment. But you're like, no, that's just the beginning.
You know, most people think enlightenment is the goal. It's really the first step. Like, it's like you just became a baby once you've reached enlightenment. And that's why I started, you know, teaching as a spiritual specialist. That's kind of been the name I've taken on for it. Because a lot of people, they just haven't had a whole ton of easy applicable information for spirituality, and I just decided, okay, I can make it so that it's really accessible. You know, like emotional healing is just someone caring for you and caring deeply enough and long enough to have a transformation occur. And who's more caring, you know, than someone who just thinks about the world all the time
like you? So you spend a lot of time thinking about the world, but you also spend a lot of time caring for our next guest, who I also just love. I love these people. I love my guests. We all become family. But Andrea Cruz, who you just love as well, is someone who is our next guest. And Andrea provides heart, body, mind, spiritual retreats. She has also turned her attention, because of what's going on in the world, from the outside, it has been helping people from the inside be able to deal with what they're going through in this global pandemic. Good morning, Andrea. How are you?
Grand Rising, Sharifa. I'm so happy to be back here again on your roundtable talk, and I'm really delighted to see everybody that's on today. So I think it started with an inward journey. I'm a humanistic existential psychotherapist, but a lot of the work that I've done was based upon healing my own childhood trauma, as I shared with you on Ask Sharifa. And while I was undergoing the journey within, my biggest question was why? Why do people do the things that they do that cause trauma in people's life? So that's why it was very curious to me that you're studying the psychopath, Elliot, because they really have a detachment of empathy and a lack of remorse a lot of times for doing the things that they do. But to not sidetrack, because I'm sharing a little bit about who I am. So that journey within really made me understand more of the fact that it's not the old Cartesian model of this is your brain and this is your spirit and here's your body, because that really is a whole self. We really are a full embodiment of our mind, body, heart, and soul. And that's where the retreat came from. It was during a meditation after a listening to a speaker, Sir John, that both Daryl and I know and have met through. I started meditating, and my question was, well, how do I bring people to that experience of coming within? And I've been working as a psychotherapist for the last about 5 or 7 years, working with families, foster youth, kids who experience trauma, domestic violence, substance abuse, all of that. And while in that, I was like, we all need a transcendence, right? Yes, we need to deal with the problem. Yes, we need to deal with what has happened in order for us to remove some of the layers. But after that, how do we elevate ourselves? How do we get from where we are at into a more cathartic experience? And so that's really where the retreats came from, is that cathartic experience of bridging the gap between the spirit and the body, or the mind and the body, and really encapsulating that in a more holistic regimen and lifestyle, where you can really explore more of spirit and our three-dimensional life that we go through every single day, that we have to pay the bills, that we have to live with family, or that we have to do the mundane things. And so how do we get to that next step of transcendence? So that's really the journey within. That's really the existential experience of asking those deeper and bigger questions and understanding your truth. And through my retreats, I was privileged and lucky enough to meet the love of my life, Daryl Hall. So I'm really happy overall that I've just lived a very self-actualized life, and I'm grateful to be here again. Thank you.
You know what? That was just so beautiful. And I'm watching you, and I'm watching the fact that you're glowing. Now, I'm gonna say something that I normally wouldn't say, but because of the things that are happening in my life, I'm gonna say it right now on the show because I feel safe enough to say it. But I was watching you speak, Andrea, and I saw all kind of orbs flying around you. Like I saw light
Wow.
fly, and I was like, is that an orb? Is that an orb? And all of a sudden, I'm like, it's a straight line of just light that's flying, and
Wow.
I see it. And I'm like, everyone, go back and watch this show, right? And I have been saying this thing lately that I may be crazy, but I'm not wrong. So somebody else, please watch it and tell me, because I already know I'm crazy, but am I right or am I wrong? That's the question on the table. Because another thing that I say is this. It's interesting with the roundtable talk show is because, as all of you know, I don't select the date for you to appear. You select your own day. You decide when you're going to come on the show. But I've seen commonalities where all of a sudden the guests that are on that show have something in common. It's just, I don't know what it is. Because we have Elliot talking to us about fiction. He's talking to us about corruption. He's talking to us about a legal killer. That's fiction. But yet there are threats and things that happen. There were people who say, no, that couldn't happen. Then you have Daryl and Andrea who are talking about the metaphysical. And then we have our next guest, Beverly Searle, who was diagnosed with DID, and she actually found her own cure. She was able to find her own cure for a disease. So people will tell you it's impossible, you can't heal yourself, or, you know, there's no way to be rid of this. But Beverly is someone who didn't listen. And she said, I am going to figure this out. Good morning, Beverly. How are you?
Good, thank you. It is good morning here. It's 1 o'clock in the morning in Melbourne, Australia. No, I started having flashbacks after another trauma in my life and found out that even I had a rotten childhood, domestic violence and fleeing in the middle of the night with mum and four kids. Finding out I had DID was a bit of a shock, and I was misdiagnosed, which is about 60% of any woman with a mental illness is misdiagnosed. And
Beverly, I don't want to cut you off, but before you go much further into the story or the misdiagnosis, tell everyone who isn't familiar with DID exactly what it is, what the symptoms are, and how it appeared in your life.
Dissociative identity disorder is the new name for multiple personalities. It's created by life-threatening trauma in the eyes of a child before you're 7 years old. So it's early trauma in your life where your personality's not set and you dissociate yourself into different personalities to hold the different traumas because they're too hard. They're too overpowering to cope with. So you split and maybe go up into the ceiling and watch the little girl being raped or whatever's been happening. And you make a different part to hold it because you can't handle it. And when I was misdiagnosed and they said, you're going to be on heavy drugs like this for the rest of your life. I just said, like hell I am. And I did the adult reentry exam at 48, 9 years at uni, 4 degrees, studied everything you can on trauma. Volunteered everywhere, ended up being CEOs of organizations, running international conferences on mental health, you name it, I did it.
Yay! And, yay, Beverly!
As I got well, I was running groups and people were saying, we're seeing you get well, can you help us? And I did. And now, 10 years later, I've had hundreds of people and I specialize mainly in PTSD, which I have a cure for. On Memorial Day, I've got stats. My university in America proved that all my work, PTSD, anorexia, whatever you got wrong with you, 10 hours of therapy and you're well.
Did you say 10 hours of therapy?
10 hours. I can guarantee it in 10 hours.
Oh, wow, Beverly, I would love to hear it.
If any of you know anyone in the Defence Force or anywhere, I can give a presentation to on Zoom and that, I can prove it.
I'm so open to hearing everything that you have to share. I really appreciate the person who has undergone their own healing and has been able to remove themselves from that situation. So I would love to hear it. And then, of course, I do have plenty of connections. And
the beauty of my work is that you don't have to talk about what's happened to you.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I've heard of that.
You're working with the limbic system, which is the center part of the brain, Mm-hmm. And like we've got the three L's, the lizard brain, the limbic system, which is the emotional feed of the brain, and the logic brain. And the limbic system, so fascinating. One, it doesn't have language. And two, it has no time. So if you're 3 years old and your big brother drops a hairy spider on you and you run around screaming, that's trauma, your flight fight, your danger part. It throws the whole example, the whole thing of you running around screaming into the limbic system as a DVD. And every time you see a spider from then on, it recognizes it. And then you have all the emotions and fear running through. Then you have the panic attacks and the phobias. So what my work does is take the pictures out of your mind, help you. And you no longer have it. So you no longer have anorexia, you no longer have PTSD. And it's getting it out. I'm an independent researcher, done it all on disability money and volunteer from health, given lots of people free or therapy to help them out.
It's exciting.
And now it's time to get it out in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love to team up with you and find out what you have.
Not with me.
What you have learned, I'm sorry, there's lots of light going on here. Okay, here we go. What you have learned, what you have discovered, and what is it that you're doing to change the brain waves, to change your own experience? Because as you had mentioned, the trauma that is triggered creates a pathway in your brain that does affect your emotional center, your medulla oblongata, that triggers your nervous system and those flashbacks reoccur. So
that's in the limbic system.
In the limbic system. And to mute that and to change that, I mean, I've heard a lot of things like theta waves can do that. I've heard, hypnosis can definitely do that, changing your environment, changing your experiences. But if you have a way to not talk about it, I would like to explore that more.
Visualization, when you meet the part of you experience, which is like a holograph in your mind and you can see them and talk to them. Mm-hmm.
I need to interview you because One of my main characters in my story, Des Cook, he is actually the main character in my story, suffers from PTSD. He's an Afghan war veteran. And in fact, it was interesting that you mentioned all these different types of symptoms and the way that people see things, because when I was researching the character, I actually had to talk to people about what do they feel during a panic attack. And it was amazing how all these different symptoms that would arise from them, you know, from the shaking of hands to profuse sweating to feeling like you have to run away but not knowing where to run away from. So someone like you would be fascinating to talk to, just because you have this massive depth of knowledge about how people approach this stuff. And I just found it fascinating to listen to, because I had to write in a panic attack, actually a couple panic attacks that my main character has into the story. So I was kind of fascinated listening to how you described it, because it really was spot on to how a lot of people I've talked to who suffer from these various symptoms.
You're back in the situation out of time and place. So you're reliving the event of what's happened to you, and that's causing the panic and everything. But the other thing with the limbic system, it doesn't have a clock. So you can be 93 years old and still have panic attacks and depression caused by something at 3 years old. That's the heartbreak of it. You know, these soldiers have been back for years and they're still having flashbacks and it's affecting them. I feel that sorry for them. Mm-hmm. And they're not getting the correct treatment. There's too many committing suicide. That's why I love it.
Have you explored the spiritual aspect of what it is?
You cannot get well unless you look at the spiritual aspect of your life.
I agree.
so important. You are in mental, emotional, physical, spiritual, social. You have to look at it. You know, one of the reasons is when you're being abused as a child, you doubt God's existence and his love, because you're a good girl and bad things are happening to you. So yeah. God must like you, but you must be a wicked girl. Well, I was told I was. So, So you doubt any form of unconditional love. You doubt all these things. Your whole spirituality is absolutely disturbed as a child being abused. And if you don't look at your spiritual side of yourself, I'm not saying religion, I'm saying spiritual side of yourself, and finding out what you believe, how you feel about things, what you know about forgiveness, what does it mean to you? Because all these things you must take into consideration, otherwise you feel hate. You can't live in hate.
One of the interesting things that you had mentioned when you had experienced your trauma was that you dissociated, but you were looking at yourself from a different perspective, you know, that you had your, and this happens often with trauma, especially extreme trauma, is that there's a separation between the soul, spirit, and the body. The physical body is enduring whatever trauma, and the spirit is like, no, I'm not having that. And it moves away, you know, and, you know, some psychotherapists could say, oh, that's dissociative, but another person may choose to say, oh, well, you, because of the trauma, you actually protected, you know, you removed yourself from that situation, you know, and took on a different perception or identity, the dissociative identity, you know. So looking at both of those perspectives is a fascinating thing to do when you're marveling at how our spirit works in relationship with our body. You know, to me, that's a fascinating defense mechanism that people have, that children have. Even if you think of the old term shell shock, when somebody had experienced that amount of ringing, you know, the bomb hits, and all of a sudden you just hear everything blacks out and you hear the beep, and that shell shock and that beep, that is the sound of light, believe it or not, because light has a frequency, light has a sound, and you're moving out of your physical self and into the light self when that pound, you know, happens. So
I like that the fact that Beverly was saying that she doesn't, she was saying she has them go introspective and figure out what their beliefs are, because it's according to their own spiritual beliefs about what it is, what's true for them, because rather than imposing spiritual beliefs on other people, which is something that, you know, I will take people for what religious beliefs they have, because it's very much like, if you're talking to someone, you're trying to help them through something, you can't just start putting up beliefs that aren't theirs, because then they're going to be, then not only are you, you know, what's true for you isn't true for everyone on earth. It's true for you. Just like what's true for them's not true for everyone on earth. It's true for them. And the fact that she takes the time to, you know, like, go through what their beliefs are and works with that, because the spirit is so strong that if you ignore what its desires are, then you can greatly ignore what progress could be made, because they might refer, you know, Allah, you know, they might believe in Allah, and then you're talking about Jesus, and they're like, this person's not even hearing me. Yeah. Like, this person's not hearing me out, and I feel like I'm not validated. I feel like I'm not being recognized for my, you know, for what's, you know, I've seen, you know, Allah or whatever, you know.
I wonder how many people that you have interviewed, Elliot, that have these types of dissociative experiences, or have experienced their own trauma, because I find that a lot of them have, you know.
Quite a few. What's really strange is some of them, I'm watching them experience the trauma while they're talking to me because they're so frightened. But yeah, I've talked to people. I interviewed people that had major traumas in their life. I've interviewed people who were killers, who, you know, who talked about trauma in their life. So, and what they experienced. And so it's kind of, it's almost par for the course for a lot of the material I tackle, because I have the people that I interview oftentimes have very different backgrounds, but they all have one thing in common. There's like one or two events in their life that are just unbelievably horrible. Right. And you can see the pain when you're interviewing them. You can see how they, it's almost like they go into a different world when they're talking about it.
Yes.
Leave where they are right at that point and move on to someplace else. And you have to kind of rope them back in saying, hey, come back here. I'm still talking to you. So that happens.
It's like a trance state, right? Where they like completely like tap into kind of like a trance, like hypnotized state where they don't even look like they're there.
Oh, yeah.
They're not there. They're back there. They're reliving it.
Yeah. No, reliving. Not a bit. Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
It is. It's terrible. I interview people that showed... when I was doing my research for The Legal Killer, I interviewed people that had great remorse for their crimes. I interviewed other people that, you know, you talked to them about their crimes. It was like they were ordering a meal at Denny's. I mean, it was, you know, there was these...
The range
is huge spectrum. And you almost, when you're interviewing these people, when you're getting ready to write a story, mm-hmm. your job is not to judge them. Your job is just to listen to them. Right. And I'm not there to treat them. I don't have the experience that obviously you do and Beverly does, but I'm just there to listen and to ask them questions and to just get their input. But it is amazing to see the range of emotions, from horrible remorse to complete disassociation from, you know, it's almost like they're talking about someone else who did these crimes, and they're speaking in a very matter of fact, dry, monotone way. So it's really interesting to see.
Yeah, that's interesting, Elliot, when you're saying that it's like another person's done the crime. Well, if that person had experienced very bad trauma, life-threatening trauma before the age of 7, they could have another person doing it.
Absolutely.
They make another persona to do it. They mightn't be fully dissociative, but it could be an ego state where it becomes a very strong, yes. dominant part of them, which takes over. So, mm-hmm. What I find so heartbreaking is the things that happen to you when you're little, when it wasn't your fault, and people have to learn that it's that's not their fault. They're not to be blamed for it. That it has practically destroyed their life. It governs their life, and they can never get past it. And I feel that. The heartbreak of it when you see these people in these states and they're just locked in it, and then to be able to help within 10 hours or so to free them. I have people say to me, thank you very much, you know, for doing, you know, getting me well, helping assist me in my journey. And I say it's a privilege. It is. It's an absolute privilege to help somebody to move forward and let it go.
One of the things that you mentioned, Elliot, that I wanted to expand on is your book is called The Legal Killer. And then you talk about speaking to serial killers and people who have killed multiple times. So define a legal killer for me, please.
Well, the legal killer is actually, and it's not really giving anything away in the story, but the legal killer is the name. When the FBI investigates people, they oftentimes will give names to the killers to just identify them, because they have various ones that, you know, will have different habits. The story actually starts out with the murder of a U.S. attorney, and hence the name The Legal Killer, because they killed someone in the legal profession. But I kind of did various types of taking those names. Like, for instance, one of my killers was based on a real killer that was in Chicago, and I renamed them. I renamed them the Lingerie Killer, because it was based off a real person who would dress up these women in lingerie outfits and then murder them. So I used that pretense of how the FBI or law enforcement investigates someone by naming someone to kind of give them an identity. And that's kind of how that name came up.
Wow. Psychological thriller for sure. You could probably create a series out of that. You know, I mean, it is such a, it's a topic that in some regards needs to be discussed more, because truly what we're looking at is not only trauma of the individual, but trauma of the society, of the societal norm. Because for some reason, somewhere in there, some parent or elderly person in their life chose to inflict some type of pain upon them in an unconscious and subconscious way, that they carry that with them. And you talked about the fragmented self, Beverly, a new identity or a new ego. In some forms, it could even be an entity embodying another human being, you know, what we have termed as possession, you know, and it could be so much so that this very subconscious act that was done to a child or somebody who is really have their own dissociative or their own trauma inflicted this subconsciously. And then this person is carrying around this trauma and inflicting it upon everyone else. So it's a generational experience. So we really want to look at that societal norm as well.
Well, I think
it's fascinating that you brought in about like possession or an identity, because in my latest book, The Boy Who Thought He Was a Dog, which he literally did, and the last chapter is to deal with the possession of people. When you leave your body, and this is how I had it explained to me, when you leave your body and you
something else comes in
from shock, and then you come back, when you leave and you're not protected, dead people, entities, all sorts of things living out there can cling on and attach to you and say, free ride and come back. Three out of the nine people in my study with post-traumatic stress all had entities in them. It was incredible. Yes. One had a dead girl. One had a man who died when he was five and was brought back. He had a lizard creature. He saw the tail, because you see them in your mind. He saw the lizard tail come out. Once mm-hmm. we exercise or evict it, because it's in your mind, you can evict them out of your mind.
Absolutely.
He changed overnight. And he's just everything. He's got his family back. He's got his job back. He's got
That's
everything.
Great. And yes. It's always, and you, it's interesting because it's generally the entities, right? Because, you know, we can say anything is spirit, right? At this form, it's thought form entity, but it's generally the entities that are resonating with the fear, with the yeah. trauma that's happening, that are attracted to that person. So I remember working with children who would say, I have seven demons inside of me. And, you know, they're having difficulty going to school. They're having difficulty, participating in the world, having friends. They're making really tremendous sketches of dark, demonic figures that they're having communion and conversation with. And I said, well, how is that working out for you? And then eventually, one day they may come in after our treatment for some time and say, I no longer have seven, now I only have two. And what you said right now was empowerment, was very empowering, because it's that person's will. And that's very important to discuss, is people forget that they have choice. They even have will. They even have power over their own body, over their own spirit, to be able to choose. Today, I'm going to rid myself of demons, you know, and that old cliche phrase of, you know, exercising your demons, or, you know, keeping my demons in the closet and whatnot. But we have these thought forms, we have these thought patterns, we have these karmic cycles that will continue to pop up into our life until we smooth them out, heal them, get rid of them. So that process that you're talking about right there is very, very valuable to empowering the individual from having the choice, because some people, they forget that they have the choice and the power over their own body because they're so used to somebody attacking it or something forcing themselves onto themselves that they don't realize that their own sovereign self has the ability, especially when they get older, because when you're a child and you're so vulnerable, it's such a vulnerable state that you're not protecting, you don't have an adult to protect you, and you don't have that person to step in and say, no, that's not right what you're doing to a child. It's hard for the ego of that child to do that for themselves because they're used to looking up at these parents and these father figures, these mother figures as their gods in some sort of world, as their primary caregivers. They're the ones who are supposed to be imposing these norms for them. And so giving yourself as an individual, as you get older, even at that self, thank God we have, you know, in some regards, we have a broken system, but in other regards, we have a great system, considering that we do have these rights for children to protect them, sometimes too late, you know, unfortunately, but giving them a barrier in which they can then say, no, this wasn't right what I experienced. I'm not accepting this reality. I'm no longer allowing that person, that entity, that demon, that human to exert their power upon me. And I claim myself as sovereign. You know, if you have a process that can do that.
That was beautiful. That was just beautiful. Like you, that's why I love what I do. I tell people that all the time. I love being able to get information. Knowledge is power. With everything going on in the world, we are living in one of the greatest times on earth because we have access to knowledge. We have access to information. I'm pretty sure, Beverly, there are people who don't want this information out. They don't want this knowledge. They don't want people to know that those traumas can be healed in 10 hours.
No, they don't, literally. There's been, you know, lots of barriers put up in my life, but I'm a person, and all my family and friends know I never give up. And even though I've had so many barriers to stop my getting out, work out, and this is my life's work. It's called My Envisioned Mind, because we envision what's going on. And I'm just getting it out. Well, it's been going for about 6-10 years now, but we're starting to like the book, The Boy Who Thought He Was a Dog. What happens if you buy the book, which is about $6 on Amazon, I'm actually giving a free course. It's called Overcoming Sadness, and I've written it specifically for now when we're locked in. It's stress, anxiety, anger, and depression. And I'm giving that course away, which is the five of my 9 steps, where people can do it in their own home, in the privacy of their own home. It's an online course with me giving the videos and talking, and you have a workbook and everything like that. And people get well. It's so wonderful to see people get well.
Gerald, that's one of the things that you were talking about again on your Ask Sharifa video interview. You focus a lot on people's ability to heal themselves.
Yes.
And it's interesting. I was hearing Andrea say something earlier about how we look at our parents as gods, and I remember hearing that the you know, you think about what a god, you know, what God represents. It's your creator. And the children are literally created by the parents. So, like, it's not even a figurative thing. They could, you know, they could hold their mom's hand or, you know, hug their dad.
Yeah.
And so when your gods are doing that to you, it could be so trauma inflicting that it is vital that you start to look at spirituality a different way and understand it in a different way. Because when your gods are treating you in that way, it really will program a lot of stress and trauma, and then that disassociation that, you know, you astral project out of the body, and other things start to come in and start to manipulate your aura from the outside when they're not inside of you. You know, when those things are happening, it's important to seek help from outside, because just like in physics, you know, it's one of the laws of energy is an object in motion stays in motion until acted upon by an outside force, or an object at rest tends to stay at rest unless acted upon by an outside force. So it's necessary to have something outside of yourself, you know, whether it's a person, a course, a practice that helps to heal these things and cause some motion, because the stagnancy is what builds up all the darkness. And if you learned how to, you know, bring in either light through, like what I do is meditation, you know, what helped me with my depression was meditation. I used to be depressed and sad all the time, and I started meditation after starting Tai Chi, and I was like, Tai Chi's cool, let's do meditation. And I did meditation, and I just started to notice, I just started feeling better and better and better, until the point where I was like, you know, I'm pretty happy about life, you know, no matter what happens, like everything's good because I have air in my lungs and I can see, I can hear, I can taste, I can smell, you know, I have all my senses and they're all worked. And not only that, I've actually been able to improve my memory through meditation. My memory is so much better than it used to be previous to meditation. And, you know, that's why I was like, okay, I can be, I can start to go into teaching spirituality or spending time with someone, like do 2 hours. I've been, you know, I've been charging $2,500 for my 2 hour sessions, just because it's effective, it creates results, and it's something that's positive for the person. And then I also have like 20 minute free ones where I can just kind of give people a quick little, hey, these are like 5 things you can do that'll make everything, you know, improve a certain amount, you know, whether it's completely or whether it's just temporarily or to a certain point, more like it. But yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, honey, but can I just had a little thought that just crept into my mind. Some of the work that you did with yourself was really about harnessing a sense of not only meditation, but compassion towards who you are and how you are developing. So I heard that while you were sharing, and I think that's something that would be very helpful for not only the victim, but the perpetrator as well, you know, because I think that's probably the loudest thing that's happening right now, as especially as domestic violence and abuse in the lockdown arena. I recently read the stats that it's increasing because we don't have our normal or our usual, everyone goes out of work and everyone goes to school, and you know, there's that departure that happens in the family systems. But that sense of compassion for the self, even the perpetrator, is an important process, because it makes us human again. It makes us realize that we are all experiences. We have choices. There's cause and effect to these choices that are happening. You know, the person who takes out this aggression onto another human being is because their stress is so high, or, you know, their sense of endorphins kicks in, because this is the way that they release themselves from this norm that they have created, from this world that inhabits them, so that they could escape from whatever it is that is bothering them. So remembering that compassion and removing yourself from the situation is really important. And I think that's probably one of the great things that we can all do for ourselves, you know, maybe even working with the people that you work with, Elliot, because, you know, I have a lot of respect for you because you go in there just hearing these stories of these people who, you know, have their own experiences, but also are the perpetrator themselves of these things. So you have to be a compassionate individual, because a lot of people would just say, oh, you did this injustice to human being. I'm so angry at you. Why are you even existing right now? You know,
they'd make the killer the villain.
Well, you know,
you know,
yeah, they do. And one of the things like that I try to do with my stories, I've always been fascinated with the person that does the wrong thing, but for the right reason. I want my reader to feel torn. The old stereotypical villain when you write a story is the old James Bond villain, right? The bad guy who's completely evil and wants to not a cell in his body is good and wants to take over the world. And we've seen that, you know, a million times. But I always believe that all of us have good and bad in each of us. And to me, it's a much more interesting story that if the person who does the wrong thing, if they're doing it for the right reason, or even vice versa, they, you know, they do the right thing but for the wrong reason. So I think people identify with that. I want them to walk away from the story not feeling, oh well, this is definitive good and this is definitive evil. I want them to walk away from the story going, wow, you know, I really don't like what that person did, but I kind of get why they're doing it. It's this torn feeling. And it's something that, you know, the writers that I enjoy reading do all the time. And mm-hmm. to me, it creates a much more realistic perspective of the human condition.
Absolutely.
That there's not just, you know, pure evil. Nothing's pure evil and pure good. There's a little bit of mixed into everybody.
There's the gray. Yeah, but, the anti-hero.
Like, if you look at the dictators, they all like loved an animal or loved their child, and they like loved them a ton.
Exactly. You know, it's you see that a lot of times in historical figures. I mean, that you know, we wonder how a person as evil as Adolf Hitler could do what he did. You know, murder millions. At the same time, he was compassionate towards animals, loved his dog more than anything. I mean, it's kind of weird, you know, and it's hard for us a lot of times to put those two, you know, those two perspectives together. Well, how is it that you can be so evil on this level, at the same time you can fawn over an animal, you know, and that's kind of something that...
But one of the things, I didn't mean it to cut you off, but one of the things that you mentioned that I heard about Hitler as well, because I actually use the same example, is because we always want to believe, like you said, that someone is pure evil or they're pure good. And most, I think everyone is a combination of both. Or maybe if they're majority evil, there's still some good in them. Even good people do bad things, you know, but one of the things that they said about Hitler is that he, to a certain extent, he was well-loved. He loved people as well. In his mind, these were his people, and he wanted to eradicate the other people so that the people he loved could have more. Now, I'm not justifying what he did, but a lot of times, people, that's why they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I believe personally that the majority of the people on earth really believe. I have an interview coming up with a Dr. Patel. It's in June. I have to check the date. I wish I was a better host and I had the date, but I didn't know this was coming up. I love Dr. Patel. Dr. Patel has been on my show. I believe this will be her fourth appearance. She's 20-something. She's this cute little small lady, but she spends her life researching suicide bombers. That's what she does. And she talks to them, but just like Elliot, like, but hers isn't fiction. Like, this is what she does. She talks to them, not them, because they're gone, but like the people and the organizations and, you know, the people who, their families of these people. And she basically found the same thing, that these suicide bombers believe that they are doing the right thing. So it's just so interesting. But one of the things that I am and I remain is grateful grateful that I have the opportunity to be here and to have these conversations with people like you. You all are wonderful. I thank you for being here today. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching the archives, and let them know what you like for them to take away from their appearance, from your appearance. And I'm gonna start with you, Daryl.
Awesome. So I have a Facebook page now. It's Spiritual Specialist. You can go to that and you can find, how to book a consultation with me, a short one or a long one. I also have a podcast that I asked Sharifa to come on next week. I'm going to make the flyer today and then we're going to put it all together. And it's the SoCal Business Podcast. I believe is it the link that is shared in this? I think it is, right?
Most likely. I don't know. I have to check it out. I got too many links in my head at this point.
Okay, no worries. Awesome. Just remember, your spirit's very powerful. It's what determines the emotions and determines the thoughts. And the lower dantian is the most important.
Well, thank you. I'm going to check it out. I'm going to go to Spiritual Specialist and hit that like button. I'm going to hit that see first button so that it comes up at the top of my timeline and my news feed so I don't miss out on anything. I'm going to go ahead and schedule. I'm probably going to start with that 20-minute session. I have to build to the 2,500. But, we're going to sit down. We're going to talk about some things and make it happen. I definitely appreciate you being here today. Everybody was just right on time. Andrea, what do you have for us?
Wow. Okay. Well, thank you again, Sharifa, for having me on here. I want to share, I'm really feeling called to share a special offer to the people who are experiencing and are feeling affected and traumatized by this current pandemic that we're on. I'm still offering a 20-minute free session. For those not only who are affected by COVID-19, but are struggling and suffering because of it. I recently created a new program on top of my psychotherapy sessions, but that's called Discovering Your Archetypal Light. And that's really looking into really looking into your own personality and in fact, your own identity that happens prior to entering the body, right? So Carl Jung talks about a dismissal of the earlier thought of tabula rasa, which is the blank slate that we are born into and our personalities develop after we're born. I find that incorrect, that we are born with already an identity. We're born already with a personality. We're born already with some sort of predisposition of personality. And some of that you can find by looking into your natal chart. And the reason why it's important for us to discover that is because we can look at the various rays of personality. And we can even title them as the early Carl Jung just started to do that, and discovering more about who you are and what your motivation, your behavioral motivation is when you're born. And if you would like to change that intentionally and move that into a different arena, or look at the pros and cons of your own personality and see if, okay, can I mute some of these cons, and can I borrow some other archetypal personality that I might want to have within our life? So it's really playing with matter. It's really playing with form, and it's really playing with the essence of who we are as individuals, and that we have the power to be able to create the world and the persons that we want to be. Okay.
That's beautiful. So, do you do natal charts, Andrea?
I don't, but I work with an astrologer who does. And she is quite a wonderful individual. Her name is Devin Poway, and we just started a new community on Facebook called astroclub.cafe, where I'll be offering these courses there. But you can find me at andreacruz.net, and I would be more than excited to help you and have and share more information. So thank you. Thank you so
they
much.
They also do life. Lives on astroclub.cafe.
Thank you, honey.
That's your PR rep right there.
Yeah, yes.
for everything that you have going on. I love it. Beverly, what do you have for us?
Oh, I'd like to give the free course away and to remind people whatever bad's happened to you can be taken out of your mind and not affect you anymore. And that's on anything whatsoever. War, rape, bullying at school, which is a terrible thing to happen to kids. And mindvisionmind.com is my webpage. And if you go backstroke books, it's got the boy who thought he was a dog and the experience in there. And the also talks about anorexia and all the other different disorders we have. And there's videos there you can hyperlink to of actual people who've done my work and how they've got well. So you get hope that it doesn't matter what's happened to you, it can be undone very gently, and you don't have to talk about it, which is wonderful. Mindvisionmind.com. That's me.
I love it. Mindvisionmind.com. Thank you, Beverly. I definitely learned a lot from you. Elliot, go ahead and take us out.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed talking with you, Sharifa, and everybody on the panel here. Everyone was fascinating to listen to. One of the things I always get people who ask me this is, how do I write? And the way I answer the question is, write. Sit down, write a paragraph, a sentence, a chapter, and don't worry about placing it chapter one, chapter two, chapter three. Worry about that later. Just get ideas down on paper. If you have ideas, I carry a tape recorder in my car all the time, or a digital recorder. If I have an idea, so I can immediately record it, I put it by my bed. So if I have a dream that sounds good, I'll do the same thing. But so I always encourage people that you can be a writer. It's a matter of just putting pen to paper, literally. I will be having an appearance at the Los Angeles Times Book Fair on the USC campus, October 3rd and 4th. So I'll be out there doing book signings and appearances. You can also visit me. My website is elliotmasonbooks.com. And we're also going to be doing pretty soon some giveaways on Goodreads, where I'll be giving away copies of the Arlington Orders. And eventually we'll be doing the same with The Legal Killer. So thank you again for having me. And thanks again to everybody on the panel. You are all great. I appreciate talking with you and enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.
You are very welcome. That was an interesting question on how do you write. That wouldn't have been my question. My question would have been, how do you sleep at night? Like, you're sitting up there talking to all these serial killers. I don't know. That's what I always wonder. People like, who is it who writes the Stephen King? Like, how does he sleep at night? Like, that's what I have wondered if I would be able to answer, ask you.
Like a baby.
You feel like a baby. I'm going over. I'm just so interested in today's conversation. I want to thank all my guests for being here today. It is a blessing to have you. I'm just so honored. I want to thank everyone who tuned into the show. Please, again, support the show. I do have the $50,000 production fundraiser so that I can produce more content like that. Also, to be able to hire the team I need and to do advertising and marketing to be able to spread the word about everything all my guests are doing. So please share the show, support the show, visit the links in the description above for all the guests and their website. Go meet them, talk to them. And when you speak to them, please tell them Sharifa said hi. If you're interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning, everyone have a safe, blessed, happy Memorial Day. Bye now.
Bye, everybody. Bye, everybody.